Hi all, it's that time of the week again. What has been a fairly extraordinary week. Today, Tuesday, downloads everywhere, volumes of material is coming up for future shows. It's all been fun and games. And some real major dock connecting is going on at the moment. And everything is converging into one. What is the one? Well, we'll see. This is the Truth, Honour and Integrity Show. My name's Thomas Williams, and today's date is the 7th of April. Enjoy the show. I'm just a simple man, and freedom is the only thing that makes a damn to me, indeed. And we're going to make it. Right, fairly packed show tonight, the usual format, and switched around a little bit again. It's been a difficult week in so many ways, just volumes of stuff coming in. So, we'll see how it goes. But we've also been doing volumes of stuff with the communal gatherings. And a year ago this week, we launched the communal gatherings. And what a success that has been. As we transmuted the corrupted by external forces, the THI state groups, into a vibrant learning and doing tool that is a credit to all who have taken up the mantle for those projects. I said at the time, why not build something ourselves? The TPC was always the answer to solve our problems, but it requires people to act like adults, drop their self-importance, my idea is better than yours, and create a cohesive, actionable group for and by the people, and that has largely been achieved. The alternative was, you can keep your aprons on, and stay waiters in the non-serving restaurants of life. Well, many decided not to be waiters anymore. And we'll have an update on that shortly. A couple of things that have come up. Those of you who donate to me through PayPal and the Think Different site is now transferred to the thi-show.com site. And the Think Different site will be only for the TPC donations. A reminder, the TPC donations does not go to me. It's the other one, or the other two avenues. And so there's two options for me via PayPal on the thi-show.com or Patreon if you wish to have the transcripts. And if you don't wish to have the transcripts, then it's better to just donate to me via PayPal, as I pay less fees. Facebook's latest for our admins who are targeted is, you must do a two-step process and download an app to get on there. Well, that'll be a no for me and Holly, and so a reminder the page will be closing the week after next. The reality is they don't like Truth, and they're pissed that we still allow certain posts and won't accept their AI admin for our page. We still have the MeWe and could develop something else on the website at a future date. So for all our show information, make sure you bookmark thi-show.com on your favourites, as that is where the live show will be posted and you can listen to live from there, not on Facebook, after next Thursday. So here's some monthly reports for March for the From His Story to Our Story book. And 1 to 3 episodes have had 3 edits, with 4 in process of the 3rd edit, while 5 and 6 have had 2, and 7 now has had its first edit completed. Episodes 8, A, B and C, and 9 have been prepared for their first edit also. a foreword and afterword has been proposed for the book, and episodes 1 to 3 are being put into book format to see how it will look and what the page count will be when the extra front and back pages are added. Now, there is a Zoom meeting scheduled for April 16th for the book communal gathering, and the details are in the communal gathering. New English as a second language editors have joined us, and we are working on the first three as well. So that's moving along nicely. The Law Communal Gathering, we hosted the intro to Law Part 1.0 for Johns Hopkins. That's a 1 with a tiny dot at the bottom and then a 0. What is law was presented on March 6th, and the Zoom was well attended from not only the US but Canada and Europe also. Then they hosted the intro to Law Part 2, Trusts, what are they and how do they work, which will be on Sunday, or was on last Sunday, April the 3rd. Time is just flying. I can't believe a quarter of the year is gone. Now, they post the Zoom recordings on the Law MeWe page so the Australian New Zealand friends can review the material and folks can go back and review the material as needed. And we are learning a lot about how to present this material, how to condense it into consumable pieces and not lose the key messaging. And he said, we are still a work in progress and hope to hone our skills as we progress. Now, each presentation takes multiple hours of study, review and preparation by the law team. And perhaps more should help out in that. And whilst we would like to increase the frequency of these presentations, it takes time to prepare for each session. And we encourage all participants to study the material in the UKDIA University folder in the Fundamentals-Start Here section of the files on the Universal Natural Law MeWe page. Now, they said they appreciate the enthusiasm of all who are attending the intro series sessions, and we also appreciate your patience and feedback as we learn how best to share this material so all can get a solid grasp of the fundamentals. We are planning to set up study groups so folks can share their insights, ask more questions and encourage more discussion so we can all learn from each other, and schedules to be determined as we have to manage multiple time zones. We're also encouraging folks to set up local study groups with other members of the law group and or set up a local study group within their communities. Now, the self-help support communal gathering continues to discuss the many facets of sovereignty and how that looks in actual daily living. One member has been sharing in their exploration of how sovereignty is playing out in their increasing confidence in choosing to engage with and then choosing to disengage from a community group that felt negative. And that exercising their sovereignty is helping them to be able to follow their heart and not the groupthink crowd in withdrawing their life force energy from projects that feel dark and controlling. Other issues regarding the ability to trust oneself were also discussed. The Positive Action Group is anticipating responses from recent actions to further the objective of holding school boards accountable for masking, testing and attempting to vaccinate children under the colour of law. And work is underway to draft the letter and verbiage to use to reach out to people via Twitter or email, such as Siddiqui McKenzie, the non-fact checker funded by Facebook, mentioned in last week's show to invite them to join us at the People's Club as an alternative to working for clown-based organisations. And when we come together for the greater good instead of just for a paycheck, we can build a better world in our image. Now, the social media team is finalising a branding book of the slightly updated TPC logos and fonts for consistency in messaging on all our documents, flyers, websites and social media postings. The social media outreach was put on hold until all this was done to ensure the branding and messaging is consistent throughout the sites. The promotional video, which is a shortened version of the TPC video that all the members did, editing has made progress but was also temporarily put on hold as the website's revamping took priority. Now, an issue the Positive Action Group is facing is that there is not enough participating. An insight from a Positive Action member said, "We cannot expect to hold others accountable if we do not first hold ourselves accountable. And the larger question is, what does self-responsibility look like? Are we holding ourselves accountable for stepping through fear? And how can we expect to become confident and courageous without leaning outside of our comfort zones? Taking that first step to do something that we have had fears about or are not confident in will build that confidence. And the invitation is to be willing to stretch. It will be worth it." The website or the web team update, we'll have more on this as time allows. This is an awful lot that is going on and not released yet, but all exciting stuff. Now, the THI show site was updated to include a highlighted search and a summary for every show transcripts from August 2018 was added for ease of indexing. Now, they go back up to 3 months from the last show. That is to protect the Patreon. And we'll have more on that at a later date. Or soon, I think. Now, some of the issues were with the donation button, and what has been fixed is anyone can now make a single or recurring donation on that site, the THI site, which is to me, remember. The TPC is on the Think Different. And also, they can select to offset the PayPal processing fees if they choose. And that means I get the full amount sent and the donator pays the small fees should you choose to do so. Me, I'm happy either way and grateful for all donations, whether it's large, medium or small. And thanks to you all. Now, a new subscription option is being developed as an alternative to Patreon. Is being added to the site as we speak, and this work is near completion, and we'll have more details on that when it's ready to launch or just after. And the team came up with some real exciting ideas for this site and even added to my workload, I might add, as if I hadn't got enough to do, but that's okay. Now, the Think Different communal gathering site, work is currently ongoing to rebuild the communal gathering site altogether, as there were some issues with the logins, as many of you may know, and at the moment the login appears to be working fine. And members can now upload most file types, I've been told, and so thanks to all who are contributing to the success at the communal gatherings. And those not Come and support your own people. Help build something more tangible than hopium and dangling carrots. All being well, this coming Tuesday will launch part 3 of the Cosmic Genetic series, and part 4 may well follow the following week. All fantastic, positive stuff. You know, this is what it's all about, everyone coming together and doing a little piece or large piece. And taking us all forward, which is the main thing. Right, some new stuff. As Jen Psaki, with the jet black eyes, proves she couldn't keep up with the lies of being the White House spokesperson and is about to depart for pastures new, it seems. All of which proves her latest COVID positive story was another lie. And she was so sick from COVID, she appeared on a mainstream media discussion show last Thursday and yet again lying to the American public. In reality, the COVID positive story was a deflection due to the heat being turned on her, particularly in relation to the Biden gate. And apparently now she's leaving and people will be less reluctant, I might add, to ask her the right questions. And it's all a psychology ploy. Now she's said to be joining MSNBC, and so essentially she's doing the same job of lying to the public. And this is becoming a sinking ship now. Harris unable to keep her staff, Democrats and Republicans standing down, and indeed the jobs and the posts could well become untenable as things are playing out. Now the European Union agreed on Thursday to one of the world's most far-reaching laws to address the power of the biggest tech companies, potentially reshaping app stores, online advertising, e-commerce, messaging services, and other everyday digital tools. Now, the law called the Digital Markets Act is the most sweeping piece of digital policy since the bloc put the world's toughest rules to protect people's online data, yeah right, into effect in 2018. And the legislation is aimed at stopping the largest tech platforms from using their interlocking services and considerable resources to box in users and squash emerging rivals, creating room for new entrants and fostering more competition, they say. And what that means is that companies like GoOgle will no longer be able to collect data from different services to offer targeted ads without users' content or consent, I should say. And that Apple may have to allow alternatives to its App Store on iPhones and also iPads. Now, violators of the law, which will take effect as early as later this year, could face penalties of up to 20% of their global revenue, which could reach into the tens of billions of dollars for repeat offences. And the Digital Markets Act is part of a 1-2 punch by European regulators faced with big online platforms behaving like they were too big to care. Europe has decided to put its foot down, said Thierry Breton, who's one of the top digital officials in the European Commission. And he said as early as next month, the European Union is expected to reach an agreement on a law that would force social media companies such as Meta, the owner of Facebook and Instagram, to police their platforms more aggressively. And it was all going so well until they added in the Stasi tactics on the public, who are wishing to tell the truth. Now, European standards are often adopted worldwide, and the latest legislation further raises the bar, they say, by potentially bringing the companies under a new era of oversight, just like healthcare, transportation and banking industries. Yet it is selective oversight, is it not, as those three industries are corrupted beyond repair and have to be replaced, in my opinion. Or is there another reason for this? Perhaps we've found it. An inauguration on Wednesday makes Oracle the first global cloud vendor to have an operation cloud region in Israel. And the center is set up together with Binet Data Communications on its server farm in Jerusalem, spreading across an underground facility of thousands of square meters over four floors and at a depth of 160 feet below ground level. You may ponder. Now, a farm is what the CIA have as divisions, just saying. But a cloud 160 feet below the ground? Is that not a real case of as above, so below then? Now, the new data center will provide advanced cloud services to companies in a variety of sectors, defense, government, banks, insurance companies, infrastructure, technology and retail. A bit like a replacement Serco, then, it seems to me. And the question is, why is it being hidden from the public? There are far too many things hidden below the ground from the public, and much of it is working against the surface public as well. Now, the EU blocks also refusal on Russian oil follows a similar announcement by the G7 countries that EU member states won't pay for Russian gas in rubles, the European Commission said last week, rejecting Moscow's March 31st deadline for switching payment mechanisms. This may not seem like an interesting story, but it's going to have a big impact. More later. Now, that announcement came a day after the similar response from the G7 nations, and Germany has cried foul on this. But what did they expect the Russians to do? Sit back and take sanctions? Where was the sanctions when America invaded, 60 countries since World War II? And Germany, of all countries, should know how the clowns shut down whole countries. And it seems to me that only one aspect of what unfolded in World War II is remembered, largely because it's been rammed down every country's throat ever since. Now, Putin demanded that hostile countries, which have imposed economic sanctions on Moscow, to pay for Russian gas with rubles, not dollars. And on Monday, he ordered the government to develop the necessary tools to accomplish the task and set a deadline for last Thursday. Now, the Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said that Russia will not supply natural gas to the European market for free, as euros and dollars will not be accepted from March 31st. Hence, mask man, Mr. Biden, releasing 1 million barrels of oil per day out of the strategic reserves of America. April 1st. And that was portrayed as him having done that for the American people to cut gas prices. But that is another lie and illusion from the government. He did it as a political stunt because America's finance and indeed the Federal Reserve cannot sustain using rubles or gold, only fiat dollars. The enormity of that should impact everyone. Now, Moscow has indicated that the new currency switch rule will affect countries that are waging economic war against Russia by imposing sanctions and freezing the nation's foreign currency reserves. And these will most likely include the US, Canada, Australia, Japan, and the EU, and a number of smaller countries. However, the new sanctions do not prevent EU members from importing Russian crude oil. And so with the last line, proving that in part this whole thing is a public charade. You either cut Russia off or you don't. It's that simple. And it also proves is this is another energy price hike. Because even when things settle down, never do the prices return to the pre-event actions. And this all smacks of a rerouting of the Silk Road to me. And yet again, the Jewish elites are involved. The Israeli and Turkish meeting we did on our show recently confirmed that Israeli pipelines going through Turkey into Crimea and Ukraine to replace the Russians, like they've always done. And part of the globalist problem with Russia is A, they wish to eliminate the Rus, and B, Russia is practically self-sustainable in every market. And in particular, in terms of minerals, the clowns want for weaponry in the main, but also industry, of which they mainly own. Now, there's been elections in Hungary, and it was a victory for Hungary's Orbán, which means a massive headache for the EU, Soros, or the Foundation, Zelensky, and the NATO crew. Now, he's a self-styled illiberal Democrat, and Hungary's Prime Minister has repeatedly clashed with Brussels over rule of law and other issues like press freedom and migration. He's also fallen out occasionally with Moscow too, and that's why there's so much international attention on Hungary's election, because Orbán is famed for his warm relations with Vladimir Putin. He buys a lot of energy from Moscow, but then so do many other EU countries. Or not for much longer, as it seems, as the carnage phase is about to shift gears. We're going to the UK next. And this is where the world is at in the UK. Life under taxes. You Americans think you've got it bad? Just listen closely to this. If you just convert the pounds into dollars, you'll get the gist of it. So if you're self-employed and put on the higher rate taxpayer in the UK, this is how transactions of business plays out. You charge a client £100, which is about $130, and £16 goes direct in VAT, or sales tax in US terms. Another £33 then goes in personal income tax, and another £9 in national insurance, that is the Social Security in US terms. That's £58 out of every £100. And out of the £42 that is left, you probably have expenses like driving to work, which cost £14.50, and another £7 goes to the VAT, or the IRS in US terms, for taxes on the gas or petrol. So of the original £100, the government in the UK takes £79.50 out of every 100, practically 80%. And heaven forbid if you drown your sorrows, and hopefully not, and buy spirits to dampen the pain, tax duties on that are 70%. £79.50 out of £100 taken or stolen by the government under the threat of fines, violence and being locked up. And people think slavery doesn't exist. And that is the real sickness in society, the greed surrounding money, all to generate the haves and the have-nots. Governments don't work for we the people. They have also been found out that they do not care for our health, well-being, or anything resembling decent life. We just have to stop tolerating it. They only do it because we allowed it. We have the power, remember. Now, I'm not sure on the validity of this, and it was sent in by one of the members, and perhaps other members have similar reports. And people should remember back in May 2020, when I stated in the early days of the lockdowns that the shortfall in funds will lead to increased county, state and property taxes to cover the losses which they imposed on us. And so the member sent this, and it said, "Have you heard anything about Freddie Mac and Freddie Mae mortgages may have a clause written in their contracts whereby if the value of the home drops 20%, it is an automatic seizure of the home?" Now, that is the second time I've heard that in the past week, which is why I've brought it up. Now, the member who sent me it said, "I'm preparing to fight my county assessor for raising property taxes in all of Washington County, Minnesota, by 20% across the board. I think they're using Johns Hopkins math," she said. Indeed. And she said, "I think this is how they're going to try to steal people's homes when the housing market crashes from all the foreclosures. And if they raise value 20% and then the market crashes more than 20%, potentially thousands of people will lose their homes." Pakistan's president, and this is connected, there's an awful lot of dot connecting tonight, has dissolved the parliament in Pakistan, which is a step towards early elections following an attempt to remove the PM Imran Khan from office. And it comes after parliament's deputy speaker refused to hold a vote of no confidence that they say the PM was expected to lose. Now, Mr. Khan claims that the US is leading a conspiracy to remove him because of his criticism of US policy and other foreign policy decisions that he has taken. Now, the opposition politicians ridiculed the allegations and the US has denied it. Remember the caliphate peace? The only opposition to Israel is Iran and Pakistan, plus the blocker country Tajikistan. So who is the US interference he's been speaking about? Well, it's the CIA again, also predictable. But another possible reason is the Taliban are expected to shut down the CIA cash cow known as the poppy fields again. Oh dear. And Imran Khan is tied into the Taliban, according to Five Eyes groups, hence the removal ploy. More evidence of Jewish elite skullduggery within the so-called American government. Remember, it was the Anthony Blinken who organized the disorganized chaos known as the Afghanistan withdrawal, where he turned over the protection of US troops and the country to the Taliban, and also handed over $84 billion in arms, military equipment, and also airplanes. But now Mr. Blinken is being brought before an international court for his actions with Albania. But Blinken said this back on in May of last year. Former president of Albania, Sali Berisha, corrupt acts undermine democracy in Albania. And I'm publicly designating Berisha and his immediate family members as ineligible for entry into the United States. And he said, we remain united against corruption with our partners, CIA, in Albania. So why did Blinken state that? Because Sali Berisha has slammed the actions by the US State Department as the work of radical left billionaire George Soros and his Open Society, an organization that claims to promote transparency and human rights in the Balkans. Really? And the ACLG and our international affiliate, the European Centre for Law and Justice, have been exposing Soros's outsized, radical, and some might call corrupt influence on the world stage. Mr. Biden's Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, has ties to George Soros through his parents. Oh my. And in 2017, Blinken co-founded West Exec Advisors, which is a political strategy advising firm with Michelle Flournoy. We've mentioned her before. And Flournoy described West Exec's role as facilitating relationships between Silicon Valley firms and the Department of Defense and Law Enforcement. Now, Flournoy and others compared West Exec to Kissinger Associates. Kissinger is associated with the George Soros Foundation. Another nice little dot connector. Yet more evidence of the Zionist fascism being exhibited in this country by what should be clear to all now is a corrupt government. And that has suddenly not got worse with Biden. It was corrupt long before that, dating back at least two centuries, at least, likely near four. And the Biden administration relied on secret warrants withheld from a federal judge to spy on the conservative journalist of Project Veritas, according to documents that were released on Tuesday. And in November last year, the FBI raided the homes of current and former Veritas journalists in a search ostensibly for a diary that may have been owned by the president's daughter, Ashley Biden. The great cover-up. Now, the group's founder, James O'Keefe, said they were given the diary late in the 2020 presidential campaign, but opted to not pursue the story since its authenticity could not be verified. And Veritas never reported on the book's contents, and O'Keefe maintains that Biden family representatives declined their offer to return the diary. which would have confirmed it belonged to Ashley Barden, and so the group gave it to law enforcement. Now that month, New York Times, with a silent J, published an article accusing Veritas of occupying a grey area between investigative journalism and political spying. The New York Times accusing others of that is hilarious, and purports to back up that thesis by citing internal documents, which included a series of memos written by the group's lawyers regarding how to ensure its undercover operations, which entail journalists misrepresenting themselves and surreptitiously recording subjects, and remain on the right side of the law. Now, the Times' publication of privileged attorney-client communications sparked outrage amongst conservative legal analysts, as well as disturbing questions as to how the New York Times obtained those communications in the first place, with many suspecting the FBI leaked them after acquiring them during the raid. All very Watergate, isn't it? Now, the FBI has been stated on this show before to be a stronghold for the DNC, so it's not a surprise if they indeed did leak them. Now, the next month, the US District Court Judge Annalisa Torres ordered the appointment of a special master to review the devices that were seized by the FBI, agreeing that the matter posed potential First Amendment concerns. Funny it's First Amendment concerns for stuff like this, isn't it? I guess people posting on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram and YouTube don't have potential First Amendment concerns afforded to them, it seems. Now this week, Veritas reported that documents obtained from Microsoft reveal that President Joe Biden's Department of Justice obtained 7 secret orders, warrants and subpoenas from 6 Southern District of New York magistrates over a 16-month period, which it did not disclose to Torres or the special master she appointed, Judge Barbara Jones. The lengths they'll go up or go to cover this Biden gate stuff is extreme. And clearly that reveals there's an awful lot of criminality, does it not? Now the documents also reveal that the DOJ went behind Torres's back to obtain extensions on the gag orders on Microsoft, and that it did not seek approval from Jones to review the material on Veritas it had obtained. Now, the group estimates that the government is improperly in possession of almost 150,000 documents, as well as more than 1,000 undisclosed contacts from journalists. And by the time Veritas filed the motion to appoint a special master, the government already had the opportunity to review Project Veritas's journalistic and attorney-client privileged materials. Now, while the special master litigation proceeded, the government apparently misled the court by omission, failing to inform it and failing to inform the aggrieved journalist that the government had already obtained contents of privileged emails from Project Veritas's cloud computing provider. This is scandalous. It really is. Now, the report explains that the DOJ apparently argued that there was probable cause to believe the email accounts maintained at premises controlled by Microsoft contain evidence, fruits, and instrumentalities of crime, thereby justifying non-disclosure orders, which was prohibiting Microsoft from notifying any Veritas journalists that their accounts were under surveillance, lest the evidence be destroyed. Now, Microsoft themselves reportedly pushed back on this pretext in a scathing, unfiled motion which got the DOJ to relent and allow Microsoft to notify the journalists. Now, Project Veritas, it says, specializes in undercover videos targeting various left-wing political and media institutions, and has been a recurring target over the years of Democrats and their allies due to the revelations of its investigations. From the efficacy of the COVID-19 vaccines to the radicalism in public education to election fraud in the government agencies to dishonesty and bias in mainstream press giants. Now, the executive privilege in this country is a complete abomination to read a law. Throw in the acts that cover up all criminality called the National Security Act, and the whole thing reeks to high heaven. Now, whilst we welcome Project Veritas's disclosures, don't think for one minute it is for our benefit. It is faction fighting again. They revealed it in their own words themselves. They are targeting various left-wing political and media institutions, has been a recurring target over the years of Democrats and their allies. What about the right wing, the centre, the liberals, the Republicans and the Israeli junta in this country running and ruining everything? If you're for and by the people, you go after everyone. It's that simple. If you're not, you're part of the factions. Based on what was mentioned earlier about the shift in strategic and trade, this was another major bombshell drop this week. Australia and India have signed a major interim free trade deal, hailed as a significant step in diversifying export markets and reducing Australia's economic dependence on China. Now, the trade deal cuts tariffs on a range of Australian exports to India, including coal, lentils, sheep meat, wool, lobsters and rare earth minerals. And it also includes a phased reduction of tariffs on wine and a host of other agricultural products, including avocados, cherries, nuts, blueberries, almonds, oranges, mandarins, pears and strawberries. Sounds all very nice to me. Now, this will have a large economic impact, but also a greater strategic impact. Australia was caught between China and America, and clearly with this deal is moving away from China. And in my opinion, they need to move away from America and their warlike policies as well. Last Monday marked another change in the narrative as three mainstream media sites I visited rendered two making renewed comments about climate change. It's all coming back. Out will go Ukraine, and back comes another engineered crisis to create fear, raise more taxes, and more shekels collected by the psychopaths. The climate has changed, but it's not the weather. Humans or cows farting. The political establishment, clowns and old order is collapsing, and not to mention the one world order also. And what has taken place is an uprising of the people is occurring, and that has not only changed the climate, but the whole landscape as well. Couple on division programs before we go into the music break. And this headline literally defies belief, but it's what we've come to expect at THI. The mainstream media's tenuous ways to promote division and find conspiracies where there is none, it seems, knows no bounds in the portal people world. MSNBC will have a new liar to their rota shortly. Ms. Psaki has blown the lid off the racist physical fitness conspiracy. Yes, you heard it right. White supremacists' latest scheme is to valorize violence, and hyper-masculinity has gone digital, they said. It appears the far right has taken advantage of pandemic-at-home fitness trends to expand its decade-plus radicalization of physical mixed martial arts and combat sports spaces. And earlier this month, researchers reported that a network of online fascist fitness chat groups on the encrypted platform Telegram are recruiting and radicalizing young men with neo-Nazi and white supremacist extremist ideologies. From a fitness club? Seriously. It gets worse. Initially lured with health tips and strategies for positive physical changes, new recruits are later invited to closed chat groups where far-right content is shared. And physical fitness, they say, has always been central to the far-right. And they have to bring World War II up again. In Mein Kampf, Hitler fixated on boxing and jiu-jitsu, believing they could help him create an army of millions whose aggressive spirit and impeccably trained bodies, combined with fanatical love of the fatherland, would do more for the German nation than any mediocre tactical weapons training. Sounds like a description of the US military, that to me. But never let facts get in the way of an agenda. And the point is, the portal people now are becoming increasingly desperate to create divisions amongst the people. Why? Because they're losing the war of the minds heavily. And if that was not the case, why write such tenuous bullshit like this and pass it off as news? Now, the specter of racism, which is geneticism, we are told is only done by one colour, the nasty whites. And yet, as our show has pointed out, that is far from the truth in relation to Jewish texts for a start. But it's not just them, as this piece reveals. In Uttar Pradesh, one of India's most polarized states, the spotlight is on its 40 million Muslims, and Hindi's Kirti Dubé tracked the status of four cases involving hate crimes against Muslims during Chief Minister Yogi Adityanath's tenure. And he used to carry a thin towel on his shoulder, and they stuffed that in his mouth and they killed him, said Kumran Ali. And her husband Anwar Ali was killed by a Hindu mob in last year, no, 2019, sorry, when he tried to prevent them from destroying an Islamic religious structure near his house in Sonbahadra district. Now, police arrested 18 people, all local Hindus, including some minors, over his death, but they were all granted bail within a few months. And Ms. Ali said her family is still waiting for justice. And she said, lynching, yes, you heard that correct, and hate speech targeting Muslims have regularly made headlines since 2014 when the Prime Minister Narendra Modi's Hindu nationalist group, the BJP, swept to power. Now, critics say the accused are often supporters of the party and that anti-Muslim rhetoric by BJP leaders has emboldened them. Now, BJP denies the accusations, but its leaders rarely condemn such incidents. Now, Mr. Modi himself was fiercely criticised for remaining silent for weeks after a 52-year-old Muslim man was lynched back in 2015 in Uttar Pradesh for allegedly storing beef in his home. Seriously, what is wrong with people? Imagine being a prepper living there. Oh my God. And weeks later, he broke his silence by saying Hindus and Muslims should fight poverty and not each other. Correct. And he also criticised what is called cow vigilantes. Now, that 2015 killing sent shockwaves around the world, but in the years since, there has been several such attacks on Muslims, and some of the worst incidences have happened in Uttar Pradesh, where the BJP's party, Mr. Yogi Adityanath, who is a saffron-robed Hindu priest. A saffron-robed Hindu priest. Connect the dots. Who has often made inflammatory speeches, and he became the chief minister in 2017. And it's hard to say how many lynchings or hate crimes happen there every year. And India's Crime Records Bureau collected the data since 2017, but did not publish it. Lynchings did not start with the Democrat military arm called the KKK. They started in Africa. And now clearly in India also. All because they're a different religion. And with so many people fighting over religion, isn't it time that it was considered as the main source of the problem in regards to war and violence? Right, we're going to go into some medical related stuff before we do an exposé, just the one this week, followed by a number of fairly interesting pieces. Not as interesting as some of the stuff that's in the pipeline, I might add, but there you go. Now, one of America's frontline doctors is warning pregnant women that the COVID jab rollout has coincided with a nearly 2,000% increase in fetal deaths as compared to the rate during previous vaccines. Now, in a Frontline Flash segment entitled Huge Preborn Death Spike released on Monday, Dr. Peterson Pierre presented statistics showing that the rate of fetal death per vaccine administered in the US had in fact massively increased since the COVID shots were made available. Now, Pierre noted that according to the CDC, since the COVID shot rollout, there have been 550 million shots administered and 3,725 fetal deaths. This means, he pointed out, that for every 147,651 shots, there has been one fetal death. What you've also got to take into account is not everyone of those 550 million shots are pregnant. And he contrasted this with statistics from the period between 2006 and 2019. And during this time, there were reportedly 4 billion shots administered and 1,369 fetal deaths, which equals to one fetal death for about every 3 million shots. It's now down to 147,500. And so if you do the math, and not Johns Hopkins math, you realise that since the COVID shots have been made available, there has been a 1,925% increase in fetal deaths, he said. And he then urged expecting mothers to take heed of those numbers for the sake of their children. As of now, for expecting mums, it doesn't matter what the FDA or the CDC says. It doesn't even matter what your doctor says. This is a doctor, I might add. Because in spite of this data, the recommendation to get COVID shots has not changed. And he said, you need to look out for your own kids. You are their protector. You have a lot to think about, and that decision rests with you, not with anyone else. Now, a stunning 23 out of 32 pregnancies during which mothers received a Pfizer COVID shot resulted in spontaneous abortions, miscarriages. And this is according to Pfizer and the FDA's forced response to the Freedom of Information Act request. Now, 32 is the number of pregnancies with known outcomes according to the reports given by Pfizer, as was reported last year. And regarding the effect of the COVID shots on fertility problems, the CDC has acknowledged that results from ongoing long-term studies are not yet available. And they're expecting us to take it. In fact, in part, forcing us. And medical experts, several of them, have warned expecting mothers against receiving the mRNA shots, including vaccine expert Pamela Acker and former Pfizer Vice President Dr. Michael Yeadon. And Yeadon also said that women of childbearing age, especially pregnant and nursing women, should entirely reject the COVID-19 gene therapy vaccines. A sobering report, and it also proves the folly of the masses of not checking things out for themselves. It appears this past week that Pfizer has been kicked off the stock exchange but is doing business at 11 Wall Street in New York. And they appear to be operating also under different DUNS numbers, which is the business code. Wonder why. And what that entails at this point is anybody's guess. But what is not a guess is the alt-media payouts, debt forgiveness, Biden and others being arrested and Trump returning in April stories that are playing out predictably again in the alt-media. Same stories, same scripts, just a different year. Same CIA alt-media narratives, and the same hopium-based outcomes, none of which have come to fruition. The only alternative is the People's Club, and everyone pulling together, not waiting for dangling carrots again. Tennis fans. I can hear one member going, oh no, he's not going to ruin it again. No, I didn't ruin it, anything. I wouldn't do that. Occasionally. No, tennis has been ruined by COVID. And the fans were upset and the sporting world was reeling after an unprecedented number of players either withdrew or retired from the Miami Open this past week. A total of 15 players were unable to finish, including the male and female favourites to win. Now, the tennis world reacted with shock, really, after the favourites Paula Badosa and Jannik Sinner had to retire during the quarterfinals of the Miami Open. Now, Badosa, who's soon to be the world number three, became unwell during her match against Jessica Pegula and left the court in tears. Now, Badosa, who was conflicted by her American opponent, decided to stop after consultation with her physiotherapist. Meanwhile, in the men's tournament, the Italian player Jannik Sinner was also forced to withdraw, and he had to give up after 22 minutes in a game against the number 103 in the world ranking. And so it was the second game in a row that had ended prematurely for the tennis fans. Well, the fans reacted with shock to the bizarre tennis day, and so one of them said, "What is going on?" Hello, McFly. What is going on indeed? Really, what is going on? Well, Captain Obvious to the rescue. All of the players must be fully vaccinated in order to compete. That is what's going on. And just as we have noted for several months now, most major sports have been hit with inexplicable medical conditions popping up in young and otherwise healthy athletes, including the three cyclists that fell in March alone. What is going on indeed? It just beggars belief with some people, the stupidity of them. And it's easy to see why so many took the jab. They are beyond stupid, riddled with fear, and always complicit in everything. The clowns in UK decided in their wisdom to create an official list of COVID symptoms, which has been expanded to include another 9 signs of a coronavirus infection. And the UK Non-Health Security Agency updated guidance now lists symptoms including a sore throat, muscle pains and diarrhea. Ooh, let's all shit our pants with diarrhea then, with the new guidelines. Ooh. And the move comes more than 2 years into the scandemic and just days after free testing ended in England. However, the NHS cautions that many of the new symptoms, listen closely, are very similar to those for colds and flu. It's not similar anyway. It always was similar, because it is a cold and a flu. And these are medical health experts. They couldn't put 2 and 2 together. Where have all the flu cases gone? And why is COVID gone through the roof and the flu cases disappeared? Because it's the flu. But that is an admission right there. It is very, very similar for colds and flus, because it is, that's why. Now, remember the report we did earlier where it stated the PCR tests cannot differentiate between COVID, a cold, or the flu. And they said the original signs of a COVID infection that were recognised in the UK were fever, new continuous cough or loss of sense of smell or taste, or just a loss of sense, full stop, if you ask me. But now the list of symptoms includes a further 9. Shortness of breath, feeling tired or exhausted, aching body, headache, sore throat, blocked or runny nose, loss of appetite, diarrhea, feeling sick or being sick. COVID, the new medical version of the blame game. which has now replaced the blame it all on smoking charade. I was told of what I think is quite frankly a harrowing and disgusting ploy that is played out in Florida, but suspected it's happening all over the country. And the ploy is people are doing a deliberate criminal act just to get themselves put in prison. Why? Because they're guaranteed a roof over their head, they get regular meals, and the third and most common reason is, which is I find is even more disgusting, is going to prison for medical prescriptions and treatment. Now that is beyond disgusting. That a person would give up their relative freedom because they can't afford drugs to keep them alive or treat them. Seriously? The health greed-based system in this country needs to be ripped up completely and started again afresh. This reveals more of the fact that the COVID scam was premeditated on the basis of making shekels. And yet again, it is a Jewish problem, and yet again, it reveals it is not all Jewish people. Because in an interview dropped on Twitter this week, Professor Talia Jiva, who is Jewish, revealed why she and her colleagues resigned from Israel's Helsinki Committee back in January 2020, before the lockdowns, raising questions about Israel's medical experimentation practices. Now, the Helsinki Committee is a medical watchdog whose purpose is to authorize medical research and trials on humans, which aim to expand medical knowledge and improve the outcomes of medical treatment. Yeah, right. And in January 2020, just before the COVID-19 scandemic hit Israel, the Helsinki Committee suddenly received a letter from the Health Ministry Director General Moshe Bar Siman Tov, stripping them of their authority. An authority to approve research experiments on humans would now be given to local committees at hospitals who stand to benefit from participating in the research. And Jiva said, go stand before your boss at the hospital and tell him that you object to the approval of a study that will earn millions for their shrinking budgets. And when you sit on a hospital's committee and think to yourself that your hospital is likely to receive some hundreds of millions of shekels or tens of millions of shekels, that is likely to influence your decision to some extent. Hundreds of millions of shekels or tens of millions for human experimentation. What does that tell you? And Jiva also explained why Simon Tov, who is an economist, made the decision. And she said, it was presented to us that it is in the state's economic interest to invite more industrial pharmaceutical research projects, she said. But Siman Tov needed a committee that would approve research, even if it meant skipping discussions about the ethics of the research, which is the committee's main purpose. Now, the price that the state asked the Supreme Helsinki Committee to pay was to skip certain steps in the ethical deliberations necessary for approval of such studies, and we refused to be a part of that. Good stuff. And that is why the Supreme Committee is so important, she said. It is external to the hospital and therefore is not subject to any of these conflicts of interest. We are not interested in and we do not agree to Israel becoming a playground for the drug companies. And she said, there is some research that they do only in third world countries, and we don't want that to be us. Shouldn't be in any country. Now, of course, Israel was the first country to roll out the vaccines after getting special terms in exchange for providing Pfizer with vaccination data. And according to Globes, the then Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu revealed why Israel had received so many vaccine doses so quickly. Because Israel had committed to send Pfizer data and details especially gathered for them, including the consequences of their inoculations, side effects, efficacy, amount of time it takes to develop antibodies. All part of the experiment, you see. All based on according to different types of population, age, gender, and pre-existing conditions. Now, the agreement extensively details the various parameters that will be sent to Pfizer. Now, Israel continued its experimentation on Israelis, eventually bypassing the Helsinki Committee altogether by the fourth dose. And that was according to the Times of Israel, who reported that. Now, a Hebrew media reported that a study examining the effectiveness of a fourth dose of the COVID-19 vaccine has reportedly yet to commence. They've rolled it out and they haven't even bothered testing it. And all this, even as the health ministry moves forward with authorising an extra shot for those at risk. And so the fourth dose has not even been tested. And they're giving it to the Israeli people. This is medical malpractice at best and potential genocide at worst. And this is what I was repeatedly getting across in the From Russia With Love series. Or From His Story to Our Story. And the mention of them removing the Israelis as well as the Palestinians. I guess now that doesn't look so far-fetched, does it? Now, the Sheba Medical Center outside Tel Aviv is scheduled to begin its trial on 100 volunteers this week after requesting approval from the so-called Helsinki Committee, which signs off on all clinical trials in Israel at the beginning of December. Except the panel never authorized the trial. But that country and the people who represent it care not for laws, and they have proven they are a law unto themselves, not only in the medical field, but cyber, military, subjugation of many countries, finance, and every other rule book. All just dismissed, and nobody says a word. A country that has more UN violations than all of the rest of the world combined. And yet nothing is done. But what I'm pleased is to see Jewish people speaking out about things that just aren't right. And we need more Jewish people to speak out. They will genocide you. There's no question of that. They're not you. And here's another. The sheer volume of these so-called people is no longer a surprise anymore. Not to THI members anyway. But Dr. Yuval Noah Harari said, COVID is critical because this is what convinces people to accept to legitimize total biometric surveillance. Hello, plans in panic. And he said, we want to stop this epidemic. But then he said, we need not just to monitor people, we need to monitor what's happening under the skin. And what we've seen so far is corporations and governments collecting data about where we go, who we meet, what movies we watch. But the next phase, he said, is the surveillance going under our skin. I tell you what, Mr. Harari, you go first. And let's really see what's under your skin, shall we? Do I detect lizard under there? Were your family depicted in the original series of V? I might add. And then he said, we now see mass surveillance systems established even in democratic countries. Indeed. Which previously rejected them. And we also see a change in the nature of surveillance. Previously, surveillance was mainly above the skin, but now it's going under the skin. And governments want to know not just where we go or who we meet. Above all, they want to know what is happening under our skin. Propaganda. Da means skin. Connecting the dots now. What is our body temperature? What is our blood pressure? What is our medical condition? Yeah, right. It's none of them. And then he said this. Humans are now hackable animals. And he said, you know that the whole idea that humans have, you know, this, that they have this soul spirit and that they have free will and nobody knows what's happening inside of me. So whatever I choose, whether in the election or whether in the supermarket, this is my free will. Well, that is over. And what he's saying is they're going to end free will altogether with the surveillance, just as I warned in The Clowns in Panic. And yet again, and this is no coincidence, Harari is Jewish, or goes under the name of being Jewish. An element at the top speak with no compassion, understanding or respect for any human life on this planet. And it's high time more people saw it as fact, because only then can it be dealt with. Message to Mr. Harari.
You suck, you jackass.
The expose is all on one country. And we're only doing one today. And it's an expose on problems that are mounting up in America that no one seems willing to address with viable solutions outside of our show. And maybe the solution show in the works will address it more. But more than 16 million homes are sitting vacant across the US, according to a report using census data. 16 million empty homes. And a study by LendingTree ranked the nation's 50 states by their share of unoccupied homes, and the highest vacancy rates were found in Vermont, Maine, and Alaska. And each state has between 20 and 22% of its housing stock vacant. Now, the three states combined are home to more than 315,000 unoccupied units. and other states rank lower on the list but have many more vacant units because they are larger. Florida, for example, is number 6 on the list. About 17% of homes in Florida are vacant, according to the report, and that's nearly 1.7 million housing units. But they also say just because a home is vacant doesn't mean it's rotting away. And the report points out there are several reasons a home could be vacant. It may be on the market, or it could be a vacation home. Now, the states with the lowest vacancy rates were Oregon, Washington and Connecticut, New Jersey and California. And a low vacancy rate often means that there's strong demand in the housing market and typically home prices are higher, but the opposite isn't always true. Now, some of the states with high vacancy rates have affordable housing markets, while others have lots of expensive homes that are simply sitting vacant most of the time because they may be vacation homes or weekend homes. Now, the states with the highest vacancy rates are Vermont, 22.9%, Maine, 22.7%, Alaska, 20.5%, West Virginia, 18.1%, Alabama, 17.7%, Florida, 17.1%, New Hampshire, 16.7%, Mississippi, 16.3%, Louisiana, 16.2%, and Wyoming, 15.9%. 15 to 23% in those states, with only really Florida you can describe as a vacation center. Now, the states with the lowest vacancy rates are Oregon, 7.8%, Washington, 7.9%, Connecticut, 8.1%, New Jersey, 8.5%, California, 8.7%, Massachusetts, 8.7%. Maryland, 9.1%, Illinois, 9.1%, Utah, 9.5%, and Colorado, 9.5%. And all of that can be fixed by the plan I laid out in an earlier show involving the trust, where everyone wins, including the banks. And if that is implemented, more people can afford their own homes then, and that then quells the overpriced rental market. Water levels at Lake Powell, which is a key water point for several western states, have dipped below a critical threshold, threatening the source of power that millions of people across 7 states rely on for electricity. Now, Lake Powell's fall to below 3,525 feet puts it at its lowest level since it was filled after the federal government dammed the Colorado River at the Glen Canyon in 1963. And the new level threatens to hit what is called dead pool, the point at which water would likely fail to flow through the stream if it drops even more. In Arizona, the Glen Canyon, which the lake's main body stretches across, won't be able to pull water it needs to generate power at 3,490 feet, just 35 feet below the recent record low. Now, sitting at the border of Utah and Arizona, Lake Powell is part of a system that supplies water for 40 million people in multiple western states and through the Glen Canyon Dam, and supplies power for more than 5 million people. If there's no water, there's no power. Now, following a very dry winter in Arizona, officials are confident water levels will rise in the coming months once the snow melts in the Rockies, but warn that more may need to be done to ensure that the Glen Canyon Dam can keep producing hydropower in the years ahead. Now, the Bureau of Reclamation's Acting Commissioner, David Palumbo, said in a statement earlier this month, "This year, the Colorado River Basin has experienced extremely variable conditions with a record high snowpack 1 month followed by weeks without snow. And this variable hydrology and a warmer, drier west have drastically impacted our operations, and we are faced with the urgent need to manage in the moment." And therein lies the problem. And Wayne Pullan, the regional director for the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, which manages water and power in more than a dozen states, added, "Spring runoff will resolve the deficit in the short term. However, our work is not done." So it's the lowest level that Lake Powell has reached, 3,700 feet in the 1980s, and could drop by another 2 or 3 feet before the end of April, it reports. And it comes as hotter temperatures and less precipitation leave a smaller amount flowing through the overtapped Colorado River. And about 5 million customers in 7 states, Arizona, Colorado, Nebraska, Nevada, New Mexico, Utah, and Wyoming, buy power generated at the Glen Canyon Dam. And the government provides it at a cheaper rate than energy sold on the wholesale market, which can be wind, solar, coal, or natural gas. Now, for the cities, rural electric cooperatives and tribes that rely on its hydropower, less water flowing through the Glen Canyon Dam can therefore increase total energy costs, with customers bearing the brunt of it. A line never. And the Navajo Tribal Utility Authority, one of the 50 tribal suppliers that rely on the dam for hydropower, plans to spend $4.5 million on an alternative energy supply this year, as its general manager, Walter Hayes, or Haas, H-A-A-S-E, called the issue sensitive for us all right now. Now, although water scarcity is hardly new in the region, hydropower concerns at Glen Canyon Dam in Arizona reflect that a future Western states assumed was years away is now approaching and fast. Arizona, Nevada, California, and Mexico already are taking a combination of mandatory and voluntary cuts tied to the levels of Lake Mead, which is Lake Powell's downstream counterpart. And along with Lake Mead, Powell is the largest reservoir in the country and crucial to keep water systems on the Colorado River functioning. Now, John Fleck, who is the director of the University of New Mexico's Water Resources Program, says, "We clearly weren't sufficiently prepared for the need to move this quickly when the levels reached a record low earlier this month." And again, therein lies the problem. It's always reaction, not proactive, with these people. And again, it's all down to shareholder greed, when profit should be going into improving the system of what is an essential commodity for all people. Now, in Utah, though both Lake Powell and Lake Mead are dropping faster than expected, much of the region's focus has been on how to deal with water scarcity in Arizona, Nevada, and California, not electricity supply. And last week, the Colorado Water Conservation Board said it would take a hard pause on demand management, a program which would let the state pay users to conserve water. Now, considerations of the scheme aimed at keeping Lake Powell's supply up will be halted until the facts change or new information is available. And Jacqueline Brown added, no more energy spent on this right now. We have to let the other states catch up with their concerns and the issues we see. And she added that the CWCB will instead focus on how water users can conserve locally without relying on neighbouring states. Notice they always push it onto the people. These are people who are supposed to be looking after it. If something is not correct, they should carry the can for it. But no, it's always react, not proactive. And she said, we can do that as a state, recognising that the trend is obviously leading towards lower hydrology and higher, drier climate, and to prepare for this uncertain future that we're looking at. What can we do right now, she said. You can think ahead for a start and stop giving all the money, the public's money away to greedy shareholders. Now, the Bureau of Reclamation officials last summer took an unprecedented step and diverted water from reservoirs in Wyoming, New Mexico, Utah, and Colorado in what they called emergency releases to replenish Lake Powell. And in January, the agency also held back water scheduled to be released through the dam to prevent it from dipping even lower. Now, anxieties stretch beyond hydropower. Last summer, tourism and boating were hobbled by falling lake levels. And the Glen Canyon National Recreation Area is taking advantage of the low levels at Lake Powell to extend boating ramps. And most are now closed or come with warnings to launch at your own risk. In Page, Arizona, we'll page them one day, just see, which benefits from recreation at Lake Powell, officials launched a campaign this month to highlight that lower levels aren't necessarily bad for visitors. And the campaign noted receding shorelines have revealed sunken boats, canyons, and other geographic wonders. Will it reveal the maglev trains that used to go under there? Not anymore. And the city councilman, Richard Leitner, said there's a tremendous amount of history out there. Indeed. And you can see some of the old dwellings and parts of the old Spanish trail are accessible now. And it's an opportunity, but it just depends on the person's frame of mind. And also whether they can control their backside when they see some strange creatures. And the record low also comes off after a tough year for hydropower. And last year, as US officials worked to expand renewable energy, drought in the West drove a decline in hydropower generation, making it harder for officials to meet demand. Now, hydropower accounts for more than a third of the nation's utility-scale renewable energy. And Nick Williams, the Bureau's Upper Colorado Basin Power Manager, said many variables, including precipitation and heat, will determine the extent to which Lake Powell rebounds in the coming months. And regardless, hydrology modelling suggests there is a roughly 1 in 4 chance it won't be able to produce power by 2024. What happens next? Well, judging by those comments, I heard plenty of complaining and warnings, but almost zero in how to fix it. Not year on year, but permanently. And like I mentioned with the oil issue last week, it's the same problem here. The greed-based shareholders stifling investments just to line their own pockets. But who decided that they should claim money off a resource that belongs to us all. Does anyone ask that question? Because all minerals belong to everyone on this planet. And once the world understands that and acts accordingly, these types of scarcity and issues will go away for us all. We've recently mentioned about agriculture, which was also introduced by the fake gods. Wonder why. But another example of large-scale agriculture does not work over a prolonged period of time. After a new study in the journals Earth's Future, led by the University of Massachusetts, shows that since the Euro-American settlement approximately 160 years ago, agricultural fields in the Midwestern US have lost, on average, 2 milliliters or millimeters of soil every year. And this is nearly double the rate of erosion that the USDA considers sustainable. And furthermore, USDA estimates of erosion are between 3 and 8 times lower than the figures reported in the study. And finally, the study's authors conclude that ploughing, rather than the work of wind and water, is the major culprit for the erosion. And Isaac Larson, who is a professor of geosciences at UMass Amherst, and one of the paper's co-authors, noticed the issues at a wedding and was shocked to see that the surface of the field was a few feet lower than the surface of the never-tilled churchyard. A few feet. And so he began to wonder why, and fast forward a few years, and Larson found himself standing in central Iowa on the escarpment, or drop-off, separating a native prairie from a field of soybeans, which is also a problem. And Thaler, who'd worked extensively with the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation and other organizations to pinpoint the few remaining pockets of original never-farmed prairie. And then he reached out to the farmers whose land abutted the prairies, asking for permission to survey their fields. And he wound up with 20 sites, and the majority of them in central Iowa, with a few in Illinois, Minnesota, South Dakota, Kansas, and Nebraska. And once Thaler had secured the landowner's permission, the team went to work, using extraordinarily sensitive GPS unit. The team walked dozens of transects or perpendicular routes across the escarpment to measure the change in altitude throughout the summers of 2017, 18 and 19. And once they had the raw data, the team used historical land use records and cutting-edge computer models to reconstruct erosion rates throughout the Midwest. And what they discovered is that Midwestern topsoil is eroding at an average rate of 1.9 millimeters per year. Or put another way, the authors estimate that the Midwest has lost approximately 57.6 billion metric tons of topsoil since farmers began tilling the soil 160 years ago. And this is despite conservation practices put in place in the wake of the Dust Bowl in the 1930s. And they said it's also clear that much of the erosion is due to tillage, to ploughing. And the modelling shows that tilling has a diffusive effect. It melts the landscape away, flattening higher points in a field and filling in the hollows. But because the USDA does not explicitly include such tillage erosion in its own analysis, it has drastically underestimated the rate of erosion currently at work in the heartland. As erosion degrades our soils, it reduces our ability to grow food, he said. And the team suggests that more sustainable practice, such as no-till farming and soil regeneration, will likely be required to reduce soil erosion rates in the Midwest to levels that can sustain soil productivity, ecosystem services, and long-term prosperity. Are the governments doing anything to correct this? Of course not, due to greed-based capitalists again. Food, like energy, homes, medical, water, and even gas, are the basic essentials for us all and should be addressed accordingly. And instead, it has turned into something very ugly, of haves and have-nots, more of the latter than the former. And it's a bizarre situation that most on this planet are not afforded, or can't afford, to not only live here, but just exist here. And it was the off-world fake gods who introduced the technology called agriculture here. For some, it was to fatten us up. For others, it was to destroy the surface. So nobody lives there, and they live in peace below the soil. And it should be noted that in America, at least, the majority of other beings are below the surface of a desert landscape. Ponder on that fact. But other issues are mounting up in America and its parental colonial country, Britain, both of whom are ran by the Caesarian groups, or the more simple term, the Hebrew Anunnaki. And both of these countries have been used as pawns by off, in, and on-world peoples and beings, some being from here and some are definitely not from this planet. But there is a changing of the God, G-U-A-R-D, or is it God, G-O-D? Same purpose and same meaning, really. And also the same outcome as far as we the people are concerned. But Putin switching energy payments to rubles or gold has marked the start of it. Biden responded by lying to the American public over the strategic oil reserves, saying it was to reduce gas prices. It was not. Reduce gas prices? On the same day, it went up 30 cents in this region. And it's not gone down since. But the Russian Gazprom has now cut off the energy pipeline to the EU, hence Germany's warning of increased prices across the board. Some are talking 20 to 50%. Not just on gas, on food and energy. Germany, France and Holland are now telling their people to conserve energy. And the other cash cow is the drugs money, a far higher impulse than most can imagine. The drug cartels are taking their US dollar bills and converting them into silver, gold and other commodities. Finance ministers from Latin American countries say they cannot openly refuse US corporate dollars for fear of invasion by US troops, but will support this move by making silver available. The North Koreans are said to have stopped accepting fiat dollars for payment for amphetamines. The Taliban have announced that Afghanistan, the world's largest opium producer, will shut down all heroin production. Which is why Biden and co. are now rushing through marijuana legalizations in various states, starting with New Mexico. And that is to cover the losses of the use of the US dollars abroad, which is critical to the Federal Reserve System. The loss of use of the Federal Reserve notes globally will signal a major change on every landscape. This is the monetary issue I revealed on January the 1st is now unfolding. In fact, all of my predictions with this monetary issue have already unfolded inside the first third of the year. I guess time and the truth is speeding up. And it will get ugly for we the people. That is a certainty. But we now have a major opportunity to change all of that, including what I've just highlighted in this expose. And what all this is signifying is the collapse of the old systems of control. And don't think for one minute the rest of the alt media clowns are fallen by the people, they're not. Including some of the information in this piece by the entity known as Benjamin Fulford and his two-team White Dragon crew. We'll find out real soon what the real White Dragon means. But whilst its disclosure to us, it formulates which sides of the double-sided coin these operatives work for. Neither side of that coin is working for our benefit, only their own asses and control. They don't have a plan. We do. And we will implement it for them by the people. And that will include clowns if they learn to behave and act in a proper manner based in Rita. One of the members mentioned this about growing their own tobacco. Following the smoking piece last week. And he mentioned that he grew two varieties of tobacco himself and was considering selling them for a quarter each until he found out if you got caught avoiding tobacco taxes, that pretty much makes you a domestic terrorist these days. Yeah. Truth in irony and humour right there. But you're also a domestic terrorist if you grow your own food, or if you decide you don't wish to take a vaccine to avoid getting an illness you are unlikely to contract in the first place. Even smoking now is an act of domestic terrorism. And don't ever say there is only two agendas, because the woke crew will launch World War III on you and declare you a global terrorist. But the two things that really does get you labelled in their bizarre world is common sense and the truth. This is a piece from Anna von Wright that has a lot of validity but is missing key pointers. And she said, in response to wishing that someone would tune Trump into the simple truth, I got white hats contacting me in a huff alleging that the reconstruction was done. It wasn't, she said. Look around. White hats? Really. another illusion game. 20 plus years of hearing about them being mentioned in the alt media reveals that. Where is the concrete proof they have done anything? There is none. It's another of the hopium programs run by the agents in the alt media working for the CIA. Whether you like that fact or not. And mentioning white hats and debt relief programs, and we're getting a lot of money, mass arrests, and all supporting the CIA and the Grand Illusion program. And we have one member who keeps posting all of that and keeps mention of how so many of them, of these top officials, are all now dead. They've been hung or somewhere executed, whatever. And it was all done by the white hats. Okay, let's assume that that is correct for a second. Just a second, I might add. What has changed from the people's perspective with all those nasty people executed? Nothing. All those nasty people dead, and nothing has changed. Are you seeing the picture now? It's not the people we need to be concerned about, or the countries, or the other blame names. It is the program of new boss, same as the old boss, that has to change. And that will only come from the people getting and coming together. Not posting CIA shite because you like what it says, but working for real change with the communal gatherings. Anna said, do you see any American Confederation of States in operation? No, you don't. That's because it was never reconstructed by the actual state assemblies after the Civil War. Well, I don't believe state assemblies is the right avenue either. Only the Israelis has an assembly within their government, which says it all, really. And Anna is another one who refuses to mention the Jewish-Israeli problem, despite having a massive knowledge base of history. And that, for me, becomes indicative. And she continues to apportion blame onto countries, and yet the real problem lies within a race, not a country or a continent. That is the problem. She said, do you see any federal republic? Ever heard of the Constitution for the United, all lowercase, states, capital S, of America, capital A? No, none of that is in operation, she said, either, and for the same reason, it was never reconstructed. Neither the Confederation nor the Federal Republic have been operational since 1861. A third of our American government and a third of our federal government is missing. Get that through your heads, face it, only that's a fact. And nobody can do anything about it except Americans who claim their birthright political status. The only actual viable parts of the actual American government that remain are the Union, National Soil Jurisdiction, and the Federation, International Jurisdiction, Global, if necessary, and that's it. And she said, what I've just said is true and verifiable. The Holy See admits it, and the government of Great Britain admits it. And the whole of the rest of the world, including people like Karen Huthers, oh my God, not here again, thinks that our government is an interregnum because of it. Interregnum. Now, an interregnum is a period of continuity or gap in a government, organization or social order. And traditionally it was a period of time between the reign of one monarch and the next. And the concepts of interregnum, I'll get that right in a minute, and regency therefore overlap. And historically, the longer and heavier gaps were typically accompanied by widespread unrest, civil and succession wars between warlords, and power vacuums filled by foreign invasions or the emergence of a new power. A failed state is usually in interregnum. Yes, it is, and was all of them things. Except America is not a monarchy government. It says power vacuums filled by foreign invaders, which rings an alarming bell end, which is Marduk. And that is what we are really facing here. And all people need to understand that fact. Now, Anna says, if these missing parts of the government had survived the Civil War, they would still be visible and operating. The Coast Guard would be operating under the auspices of the American federal government, the Federal Republic, instead of the US Navy. Our airspace would be under the control of the American Federation government, not the FCC or FAA, which are unelected, unaccountable foreign agency corporations hired by the Brits. The United States Patent and Trademark Office would be run by Americans working for the Federal Republic, not by Serco, a British Management Services Corporation. In fact, the whole agency system exists because the Holy See and the Brits have hired subcontractors for us to do the jobs that the Federal Republic is supposed to do. And every time you see an alphabet soup agency, guess what? That's work that should be done by the Federal Republic, but it isn't being done and controlled by the Federal Republic because the Federal Republic hasn't been reconstructed. So is the Federal Republic vacated, standing there ready for someone like Trump, heaven forbid, to march in and take over by fiat? No, it's not, she said. The moment that the Confederation ceased functioning, all powers delegated to it rolled back to the Federation, which delegated those powers in the first place. And this happened by what is called operation of law. It's automatic. When the Confederation collapsed, the Federal Republic that the Confederation funded and ran also went down with it. And all powers delegated to the Federal Republic rolled back into the Federation too. Both the Confederation and the Federal Republic can be restored and reconstructed by the states of the Union that created them in the first place, which was done by British Freemasons. Anna neglects to mention that. Or we can operate without them directly under the auspices of the Federation of States for as long as we need to. U.S., United States, states created by the Congress of Vienna. Now, the Federation conducted all business both in trade and commerce for 5 years during the Revolution. And she said, we can do it again, and we are doing it again, because all the federal subcontractors folded. The American subcontractor, the Federal Republic, has to be reconstructed, which means the Confederation of States has to be reconstructed by only the people with the standing and authority to do so. and that can only be done by Americans who claim their birthright political status, and that takes time. The British Territorial Service Provider, doing business as the United States of America, Inc., went bankrupt officially March 13th, 2022. The Holy See's Municipal Service Provider, doing business as the United States All Capitals, Inc., went bankrupt in 2015. There's nobody but the Federation left standing, she said, and you can all be glad that it is, because if it wasn't, a large number of really bad things would happen. The first, all secondary creditors of both the two bankrupt federal subcontractors would be in here collecting against Americans. Second, our assets, including our land and our gold and silver assets, would be considered abandoned assets that anybody could claim, and those same secondary creditors like China and Saudi Arabia would be in line to do so. And America would instantly go from being one of the richest countries to one of the poorest. And she said, so you can thank your fiduciary that was still on watch, or you would all be up a very long creek without a paddle. And the old-fashioned, chunky-clunky Federation of States is all you've got left, whether you like it or not. You need to get full force and front behind it, because it's the only boat afloat. And so there's your observation lesson, status update and wake-up call for this morning, March 29. In my opinion, it's all about which point in time that people start to reference from. But we the people do not want federal anything, Anna. And we'll find out why in the next piece. And changes will not come via white hats or people connected to bloodline families either. It can only come from the people themselves in a grassroots manner. And using any of the old system models is replicating the past. The past has failed us all. And people have to recognize that as a fact and build a new, transparent and fair system. Not running back in time or abortus programs, all of which were created for us by off-world. We're going on an archaeology trip now. You wish to know what is really playing out in Ukraine and Crimea? Then we have to go back in time. The Crimean Tatars, T-A-T-A-R-S, not Tatars, were formed as people in Crimea and are descendants of various peoples who lived in Crimea in different historical eras. No, they weren't. They were formed somewhere else. Now, the main ethnic groups that inhabited the Crimea at various times and took part in the formations of the Crimean Tatar people are the Tauri, sounds like Taurus, Scythians, Sarmatians, there they are again, Alans, Greeks, Goths, Bulgars, Khazars, Pechenegs, Italians and Circassians. Remember in the Cosmic Genetics Part 2 we mentioned the Alanians. And then we have Alans in the same region. An important role in the formation of the Crimean Tatar people belongs to the Western Kipchaks, known in historiography as the Cumans, C-U-M-A-N-S. And they became the consolidating ethnic group, which included all of the peoples who inhabited the Crimea since ancient times. Kipchaks from the 11th, 12th century began to settle the Volga, Azov, and Black Sea steppes, which from then until the 18th century were called the Deshchi Chipchak Kipchak Cumanian steppe. So let's see if these Cumans fit into a pattern, shall we? The Cumans were fierce and formidable nomadic warriors of the Euro-Asian steppe, who exerted an enduring influence on the medieval Balkans. They were numerous, culturally sophisticated, and militarily powerful, and many eventually settled to the west of the Black Sea, influencing the politics of the Kievan Rus, the Galicia Volhynian Principality, the Golden Horde Khanate, the Second Bulgarian Empire, the Kingdom of Serbia, the Kingdom of Hungary, Moldavia, the Kingdom of Georgia, the Byzantine Empire, and the Empire of Nicaea, the Latin Empire, and the Wallachia, with Cuman immigrants becoming integrated into each country's elite. Does that sound familiar? That just described not a movement of people, but an invasion of whole swathes of Europe. Right there. The Cumans also played a prominent role in the Fourth Crusade, and in the creation of the Second Bulgarian Empire. Cuman and Kipchak tribes joined politically to create the Cuman-Kipchak Confederation. A confederation, which Anna mentioned several times, is more in league with off-world terminology. And after Europe, the US was next, followed by Canada, in 1867. The Con of the Federation was then replaced with the term Federal. But Federal is another galactic term introduced in the 1640s as a theological term in reference to covenants between God and man. Yet nobody asks which God. Even few ask, why would God create a system of government, which always has an element of tyranny, control, hierarchy, and dominance? Well, the real answer is, Source wouldn't. From French federale, an adjective formed with Latin fodus, which means covenant, league, treaty, and alliance. Again, those last four words are all used in galactic circles. Now, since the second half of the 11th century, they began actively moving into the Crimea, and a significant part of the Cumans hid in the mountains of Crimea, fleeing after the defeat of the combined Cumanian-Russian troops from the Mongols, and the subsequent defeat of the Cumanian proto-state formations in the northern Black Sea region. Now the Tats, not to be confused with the Iranic Tat people living in the Caucasus regions, the Iranian Tatars were part of the original Tartaria along with the Rus. These are not one and the same people. They've used a similar word to confuse people. and the fake Tats who used to inhabit the mountainous Crimea before 1944 predominantly are Cumans, Greeks, Goths and other people, as Tats in Crimea were also called Hellenic Urum people. The Greeks settled in Crimea after they were deported by the Imperial Russia to the area around Mariupol. Why has that name come up again now? And historians suggest that inhabitants of the mountainous part of Crimea lying to the central and southern parts, the Tats, and those of the southern coast of Crimea, the Yaloboyo, were the direct descendants of the Pontic Greeks, Armenians, Scythians, Ostrogoths, which is Crimean Goths, and the Kipchaks along with the Cumans. Cuman Tank. While the latest inhabitants of the northern steppe represent the descendants of the Nogai horde of the Black Sea, nominally subjects of the Crimean Khan. And one of the Cuman tribes not mentioned by the researchers is, and it begins with IL, which just happens to be the international code for Israel. They are called the Ilunk Suk. You know what that means? Little snake. Are you connecting the dots now? The Crimean Tatar population in the Crimean Peninsula was partly exempt from taxes. Does that sound familiar? And for a long time, until the late 18th century, the Crimean Khanate maintained a massive slave trade with the Ottoman Empire and the Middle East, which is one of the important factors of its economy. Exempted from taxes. Oh my. Which other race are largely exempted from taxes? And what is playing out now is a reversal of the past off-world diaspora races that had taken over this planet and ran amok. It is no longer their time. Believed for over a century to be an inner harbour, there is a 2,500-year-old artificial lake on an island off the coast of Sicily, and was actually one of the largest sacred pools in the ancient Mediterranean, according to new research by an Italian archaeologist published recently in the journal Antiquity. And a key discovery was that the basin, which is longer and wider than an Olympic swimming pool, was fed by three subterranean freshwater springs. And the findings of the three temples, rather than the expected harbour buildings on the edge of Motia's Kothon, a term used by Greek and Latin authors to describe the military harbour of nearby Carthage, placed the sacred freshwater pool in the centre of a monumental circular religious compound. Just like the Aztec ruins. Sacrifice, sacrifice, sacrifice. And this revealed it could not have served as a harbour, as it was not connected to the sea. And instead it was fed by natural springs, according to Professor Lorenzo Nigro of Sapienza University in Rome, who led the excavation. But then a further discovery of an inscription with a Greek dedication to Belios, which in Greek means Baal, the Canaanite god of fertility, rain, and thunder, it is said. No, of sacrifice. That was worshipped in many ancient Middle Eastern communities and cemented the reinterpretation of the site. Temples, architectural niches, stelae, and other features within the complex were orientated towards the rising and setting stars and constellations of practical and symbolic significance, such as equinoxes and solstices. And the arrangement of buildings, stelae, altars, sacrifice, tables, bothroi, which are pits, votive offerings, and other features within the enclosure. It suggests a place of religious activity dedicated to the sacred waters, the sky, and the associated gods, all key elements of the phony CIA and religious beliefs. Phoenician. In addition, the bronze pointer of a navigation tool, or astrolabe, was recovered during excavation of the Temple of Baal, supporting the thesis of an astrological orientation for the compound. Now, the nearby Temple of Baal is aligned with the rise of Orion at the winter solstice. While stelae and other features were aligned with other astronomical events. And this points to the deep knowledge of the sky reached by ancient civilizations. No, they were not ancient civilizations. They were a different species altogether. Ancient civilizations. And it was also noted that the uncovered temple of Astarte, here we go again, is orientated south-southwest, where the planet Venus, Lucifer, associated with the goddess Astarte and Aphrodite. Remember, from Russia with Love, plus 11? They'll connect the dots with that. And it rises in summer, and the niche, which would have housed the likeness of the goddess, is on the northern side of the temple, oriented towards the nearby Mount Eryx. Now, the location of the renowned temple of Astarte, Aphrodite, Venus, mentioned by Cicero for its wealth and sacred prostitution. Prostitution is sacred in their world. Perhaps sacred also means slavery. Now, the third temple, the Sanctuary of the Holy Waters, is located on the western side and was associated with the sun set of the netherworld. And the statue of Baal would have watched over the sacred pool as it served as a surface for observing and mapping the movement of the stars based on the alignment of the structure and features position around the sacred enclosure. And in 2019, they placed a replica of the statue at the center of the pool of Baal to recreate the visual impression that might have been experienced by an inhabitant of ancient Motya. They placed a statue of Baal in the pool. And then you had the Vatican placing a statue of Moloch recently, and a bigger picture emerges. And perhaps that explains why Sicily was always linked with the Mafia. It ties in with the same countries mentioned in other shows of Romans, Greeks, Venetians, and even the Alans we mentioned in the Cosmic Genetics. They install their people in all areas so they always win, was always the narrative, or so they thought. But let's not forget that the top of the tree was cut down. And so now all these puppets, none of which have a clue, as there is no direction from the top anymore, now these people and entities think that they are the top of the tree. And what they fail to realize is that the tree was cut down to a rotting stump and is being fed on by the insects. Oh, the irony. The giant tree of life, theirs was the Kabbalah tree, the tree of Darth or death. It was so big it stifled all growth in the surrounding forest. And there's a reason many of the old pictures depicting Ra or Apophis and the rest of the snake cult brethren is always accompanied with a tree. Connect the dots. You're riding the endless caravan, bonded and sold as a slave, or thrive within and of your own sovereignty. Sleep with the devil, and then you must pay, they say. Sleep with the devil will take you away, or you observe but not absorb and dance within. And it's time we all let go of our self-made prison bars and set ourselves free. In nature, there is no void. New growth must arise. And we, the people, are that new growth. We are the saplings. We are not the phoenix from the ashes. We are the eagles that soar from above. We are the butterflies emerging from the caterpillar. And we have to plant the seeds of growth and allow all to grow at the same time so the forest blooms again in harmony with each other and nature. You want climate change? You want environmental change? Well, we the people are both. You change the climate by changing the people's energy fields. You change the environment by becoming the forest of growth and living in harmony. The question is, will you stand watching the rotten stump decay and we all die with it, or plant your new seeds of growth? Disruption, deflection, and fear is all they have left. That's it. The lie is falling apart, and Rita is unfolding on a massive scale.
Oh, for muse of truth, that we could descend into the darkest hells of our own inventions.
Final piece tonight, and all being well, I'll be back on Tuesday for part 3, Cosmic Genetics. One of the biggest lies or illusions told to us is that blood makes you family. And it's used against people to accept poor behavior by people within our own families. But he or she is your insert label, and you should love them because of it. No. Unacceptable behavior should not be tolerated by anyone, least of all from so-called family members. And blood means you are only related. Loyalty, love and trust is what makes you family. The modern day Tower of Babel, built with whips and chains, is about to collapse on a world scale, it seems. That modern day version is the US dollar, petro or otherwise, given Putin shifted the financial landscape last week. Inflation is already with us, but hyperinflation is not and hopefully never will. But it is a strong possibility the old system collapse like a tower of stone, black or otherwise, and the clowns don't have an alternative or a plan to fix it. The answer is, it can't be fixed. It's broken beyond all reason, and just as I stated back in 2019, it was countdown time. And all governments are going to come under pressure now as prices increase, and the anger and rage will also. And this can have two effects. One, it provides the dwindling clowns with a one world government, or two, the people will backlash and rise up and demand something new, and all former heads to roll. Perhaps your biggest investment now is food. I warned of shortages back in a piece in February 2019, long before the blame everything on COVID narrative became a modern day meme. And you can fear the change, or you can embrace it and come and be part of the solution. Replace fear with love, and it's game over. They are existing now only on our own fears. That's it. And radical changes were always going to be required. Another thing the world's leading banker refused to listen to. Once the old system went about Ouroborosing itself. And this is what the TBC is for, the change. And change means you have to start first by changing yourself, then come together with like-minded people to be the change together. There is no question about it now. We are in extraordinary times. The convergence of information, people, ideas, and indeed time itself presents us with the greatest opportunity for millennia to finally work towards having a planet we can all be proud of, and something for the first time in history that is built for and by the people and is sustainable. Not the UN agenda version of sustainability, real sustainability that can enhance all people's lives without overbearing and overarching control systems. And yes, we can gaze at the stars in glorious wonderment, but like shadow work, we fail to look back at ourselves or our own planet. And all it takes is people acting in Rita, righteousness, truth and accountability, and the world becomes the paradise it was meant to be originally. And if we can all do that, I guess we're all coming home. Home is here, home is now, and home is the future. This is the Truth, Honour and Integrity Show. My name's Thomas Williams. Bye for now.